This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I'm excited. I have two wonderful guests today. At the bottom of the hour, I have Aaron Washington, and we're going to be talking about a book. Well, I like the title. It's called Squats and Margaritas, and all you have to say to me is margarita, and I start smiling, so I'm looking forward to talking to Aaron at the bottom of the hour. And also there will be a message from Glenn Erickson, who is always talking about the importance of supporting the Red Cross. And today I know that the Red Cross has put out a big alert saying that they are very short at their blood banks, and if anyone can donate blood, they would appreciate it. So I want to thank Glenn Erickson all the time. He's always promoting the Red Cross. So we'll hear that at the bottom of the hour. But right now I get to talk to him. I consider him an old friend. Well, I don't know. I guess old. I don't know if he calls himself old. Rick Bava. Hi, Rick. How are you?
Oh, Patsy, it is so great to be back with you and be back with your audience. Your audience should know you have such a distinguished program supporting writers and readers, and it is just such a pleasure to be with you. And I also want to support your mission at the bottom of the hour for the Red Cross.
It's important. They are really having such a terrible time. And, of course, you know, the last time you were here, because we were talking about In Search of the Baby Boomer Generation, a book that took you on the road for a couple of years as you went out to investigate and do your own study about what was going on with baby boomers. And I love that book. And I just want to say that when we were talking last time, my son was at UW, University of Wisconsin, working on his PhD. And then, of course, this whole COVID thing hit, and he was delayed. His doctorate was delayed for a year, you know, until they could get their act together.
Yeah.
But finally, he has his PhD from UW, so we're very happy about that.
Yeah, of course, that's my alma mater, and we share that. In fact, we have the third generation of Bavas at University of Wisconsin-Madison now. My grand niece is now at the business school at the University of Wisconsin. So I really like that we share that in common, Patsy, your family and our family. And I must tell you that I really appreciated all the support you gave for the book. Just being on your show and being able to talk about the baby boomer generation with you was such a boost, and you have such great listeners. I'd like to give a special recognition to Jim Lamb, who is a regular listener to you. Of course, he's a distinguished journalist in your area, so I would like to mention that. And just great to talk to you.
Well, it's wonderful to talk to you. And as a matter of fact, before we go to commercial today, we're going to have a literary gem from Jim Lamb. He started doing these short 2-minute analysis of writing and talking about writing elements. And so we're going to have one of Jim Lamb's
isn't that great?
Today. And so that's nice that you mention him. He is, of course,
sure.
I think he's my biggest fan. He's such a wonderful person.
He sure is. And a very good writer and, of course, a great support element for writers and readers, and also big support of you and Joy on Paper.
Thank you. Well, you know, and I want to tell you too that I have been enjoying so much getting your newsletter, your updates that you have been sending out, because I, you know, I could get so many, and I have to really limit how many I can read because, you know, I'm reading a lot of books. But I always read yours because you are so informative, and I think it's important that, you know, that for baby boomers, it's something that what you're doing, this work that you're doing to update baby boomers on things that are happening, it's very important.
Well, I really appreciate you mentioning that. Yes, you're speaking of our magazine, Today's Senior magazine. I have three components to my work, obviously part of the leadership team, and the business element also keeps me busy. And I'm into my 10th year now also of writing my column, The Baby Boomer Corner, Today's Senior magazine, which is really the impactful part. It's the featured column of the magazine that really continues to share of where baby boomers have been, where they are, where they're going. So I really appreciate your reading it. It means a lot to me.
Well, tell us about how you started the book and about your adventures, because going on the road and doing all this analysis and interviewing people to find out more about their lifestyle, about the things that were of concern to baby boomers, tell us how you just started that whole thing and some of your adventures along the way.
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question. I really appreciate being able to share with the audience. Being a thought leader, spokesperson for the baby boomer generation is my encore career. I was, a corporate executive for most of my life, and as I was winding down my corporate life, I wanted to find a way to continue to contribute to society. And a lot of baby boomers do that. It's called the encore career. And with the help of the University of Oregon and their business school and their students and a distinguished professor there by the name of Dr. David M. Bush, we kind of carved out a stepping stone for the later part of my career. You see, Patty, my grandfather, father, a loving uncle, all worked late into their life, and I wanted to follow their footsteps. So I began going out, talking about our generation. The University of Oregon had thought that there was a window. They knew I was interested in my own generation, and it wasn't maybe being as covered as well as it could. And really, everything that happened after that is started with that. The speaking engagements, the traveling the country, speaking to baby boomers from all over, every walk of life and every socioeconomic background, to find the hidden gems of what's on the minds of baby boomers. And it started as a blog, and then the blog was a great stepping stone to the book. The book was, if I can say modestly, highly successful and acclaimed, and still is. And of course, the offshoot there is Today's Senior magazine. So a combination of all of those elements gives me a platform to speak about something that is very important to me, and that is the wellness of the baby boomer generation, wellness covering every component.
And it is important. It's an important subject, and hopefully
Yes. It
also reaches out to younger people to look at their lives and to see, they see what their grandparents are going through, now their grandparents and their parents are going through, and perhaps not make some of the mistakes, because a lot of baby boomers, well, simply didn't plan, didn't plan for this longevity of life that we are blessed with nowadays.
Well, you pick up on something really strong there. I have an association with Georgetown University, the Masters in Aging program led by Dr. Pamela Saunders, and obviously spoken at Georgetown, and they use the book in their Masters in Aging program as required reading. And it's very interesting when you address the students of, basically, you know, in their 20s and early 30s, and they reflect. They've heard their parents speak about the baby boomer generation, and it's, you know, they enjoy getting a perspective on their parents from a different window, right, from somebody who is speaking on it. And I think that the second hidden gem of the book was, yes, the baby boomer generation identified with the book because it was talking about them, but the real hidden benefit was people of other generations being able to use the book in terms of studying about a very powerful generation that you know, made a real impact in America.
Now, we're talking about particularly the 60s, I think, mostly the 60s, the end of the 50s into the 60s, 70s. You know, that was a wild time in so many ways, and even, you know, compared to today, with the sort of the hippies and all that was going on, the whole country changed because of that generation. And, of course, the Vietnam.
A baby boomer, just for the audience's benefit, is defined as a person born between 1946 and 1964. And the vast part of the baby boomer generation, the biggest area, were baby boomers born in 1955. Malcolm Gladwell, in his book, addressed people born in 1955. Bill Gates, for example, is born in 1955. So what happens is this is a group then that would have, you know, saw the changes that happened in the late 60s and entered college in the early 70s. And boy, Patsy, you've hit the nail on the head. It was a real change for the country. And matter of fact, there's a lot of people who have a little cottage industry of showing what people looked like in 1962, 63, 64, and then what they looked like in 1965 to 1975. It's a fun thing to see.
Now, what were you like in those days? I would say from the time you were 18 to 25. What you were at the university? Well, of course, you were a prodigy. You were a tennis prodigy, so you were really active.
That's right. I went to the University of Wisconsin on a tennis scholarship. I really enjoyed my experience at in Madison. Wisconsin was a great place to go to school, but it was an interesting adjustment for me. Even though you would think as an athlete, and it brings about a certain amount of popularity, but I went to a private high school in Chicago, Notre Dame High School, and you know, there was a more conservative type of environment. You know, we still wore Letterman jackets and at Notre Dame, and then you go to Wisconsin, and at that time things were really exploding in the country. So I really think it was a great experience for me, because I think I was a communications major, so I was suited for this, to try to learn other person's perspective. And I think maybe the learning experience of then and what we could do now is, you know, it's better to be a good listener and see other people's point of view as opposed to just blowing your own horn, so to speak.
Well, there's such a dichotomy during that period, because you had the side of the young people who were going into the military, and then you had the side of the young people who were avoiding the military.
No question.
And that's still impacting us today.
Oh boy, that's really true. The only difference, though, is I think there's a greater respect for the military or people who serve today than there were in the 60s. It is a little bit unfortunate. I talked to a lot of baby boomers who served in Vietnam, and they will tell you that they felt a little bit disrespected. So it's great that there's been more attention paid to their service now. But you're really right. It's just like in anything, any kind of split, may it be Civil War times, the period that you're talking about, all the strife of the 60s with civil rights and the Vietnam War, to what we have today. It's never easy when you're in a polarized environment.
Now, what do you find today? Today, of course, with being in that generation, this entire COVID thing has had such an enormous impact.
Yes.
What are the things that are really showing up for you when you talk to people? What are you discovering? How are they handling it?
Well, I'll tell you what. It falls into three categories. The first is, because of the magazine, you know, I'm like laser focused on the baby boomer generation. So of course I'm getting their perspective, but they're also sharing about their elderly parents, right? That would be something that's also impacted. So it's their own health and wellness. That would be number one. The worry about their elderly parents, because there's a lot of baby boomers who are caring for elderly parents, Patsy. And then the third aspect is the reaction from their own children and how that's happening. I think, you know, baby boomers as a whole had been already focused on health and wellness. And then, of course, with COVID hitting, it's been, I guess the easiest way to say it, it's been a very, well, I think I'm speaking to the choir of your audience when I say it's been a difficult couple of years.
And, of course, for baby boomers who have parents in, you know, who they couldn't visit in retirement places, I know several people whose parents passed away during this period, and they weren't there. They didn't see them.
Yes, heartbreaking. No question about it. It was a really unfortunate situation. But I will say there was one benefit to the COVID situation. As people stayed home, they had more time to listen to Joy on Paper.
and quite a few of them have started writing. I was really...
That's really true. Oh, gosh, I should have mentioned that as well. That has been great for them, not only for the experience of writing, you know, as to what they want to do, but I find that a lot of baby boomers approach me saying that they're able to gain a lot of perspective on their own life by just using the pen or the keyboard.
Exactly, and they are. I get so many emails from people who say, well, I'm not exactly writing a book, but I am writing it all down. I realize now how important that if I'm gone, the stories that I have are lost, and so they are writing. But quite a few of them actually in November joined into that NaNoWriMo and wrote a book in November. And it's so exciting.
And you know what? Even if they're not writing books or writing articles, a lot of them are keeping journals.
Exactly.
You know, that is really important. One thing that is a great personal experience, if I might share, is that my wife's mother was a great journal writer. And my wife gains a lot of knowledge about her own family and the heart and soul of her family by reading her mother's journal. So, you know, when you're writing a journal, it's not only for your own eye on the world, but it really leaves an impact behind you.
It does, and I so encourage people to do that. Of course, before we had cell phones, people have so many photographs, and there's a growing interest in making sure that you copy your photos and make these journal entries, notes about where these events took place and who's in the photos. And I think it's wonderful. One of the programs I recommend is Scrivener for people who are doing that, because it breaks it right down. You can just copy in your photos, and you have your photos there, and then you have a journal area there. You can write about the photo. It is a wonderful program. It costs, I think, $29.95. It's called Scrivener. It's a great program. I don't know if you've used it. For anyone who's writing, it's a wonderful program, particularly anyone who's writing a major book. Like if you're writing a book with, 100 characters, it's so easy to keep track of the characters. But for people who are doing journaling, you want to add the photos, get Scrivener. It's wonderful.
I would like to also comment, a great tip on Scrivener, but I would like to also comment on photographs, and this may also be something that would relate directly to your audience. I spent a lot of time as elementary school and high schooler on Siesta Key in Sarasota, and I love that area. In fact, when my father was reaching towards the end of his life, I took him there for a father-son trip because my mother had passed away, and I said, "Dad, where would you like to go? I would like to take you somewhere so we could spend some time." And he said, "We always had our favorite vacations on Siesta Key," and I was just actually going through some of the photographs of the days gone by and on Siesta Key, and you know what? The memories were second to none, Patsy.
Exactly. It's a wonderful thing to have. And as I said, put it together. Make sure you scan these photos before they're lost, and make the notes and the journal entries to tell people who and what you were doing in your memories, because I would love, none of my grandparents ever wrote anything. And all I'm left is are the stories. And luckily, I had one grandmother.
They told you verbally. Did they told you?
Oh, yes. Right? My grandmother was fantastic. And I started writing her stories down years ago. She talked enough for all four of them. That woman was full of stories. And so I've preserved those stories. But the guys, they were hardworking guys, and they never wrote anything. And I really, other than some love letters that my father wrote my mother, I don't have anything.
So John Adams, Abigail Adams there, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's just a great thing to do. And please tell people how they can find you, how they can get your, updates from you.
Oh, well, isn't that nice of you, Patsy? I actually appreciate that, but I really was honored to come on your program just to be with you. It's just a pleasure to always talk to you, and I'm so grateful for all you do for readers. But yes, I think the best way to get a hold of me is at Today's Senior Magazine. It's Today's Senior Magazine. It's actually www.today's and then sr.com, and you can reach out to me that way. And also, you know what, in this day and age, you can just reach out to me on Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn. I'm very accessible on all of those, and of course the book is up on Amazon. But this was really a half hour about just the pleasure of talking to you and wanting to share how great it is to speak with someone so in tune with the writing community.
Well, Rick, I'm so happy that we started the year off 2022. We hope it's going to be a better year.
Yes.
And that you are one of my first guests for the year, and it's Rick Bava.
Great. I feel honored to start the year with you.
That's the way to do it.
For having me on.
Well, I think you are wonderful, and I so appreciate everything that you are doing. And everybody get this book, In Search of the Baby Boomer Generation by Rick Bava. It's available online, and also go and check out his magazine, because it is fascinating. Thank you again, Rick, for being on Joy on Paper today. And now we're going to play Jim Lamb Literary Gem.
Great. Enjoy Jim Lamb's piece. Thank you very much, Patsy.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, the Joker in Batman. Each is an antagonist. When it comes to storytelling, each brings something special to the table. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. An antagonist represents a roadblock, an obstacle, a challenge. He or she or it stands in the protagonist's way, keeping them from reaching their goal. Antagonists are often villains, like the bad guys who take on James Bond, Oddjob, Goldfinger, and Jaws, the towering assassin with steel teeth. An antagonist doesn't have to be a person, however. It might be an organization like Spectre, Hydra, or Chaos. Or it could just be a bunch of flying monkeys out to ruin the hero's day. The prime purpose of antagonists is to bring conflict to the story. Sometimes the antagonist is a friend, like Iago in Shakespeare's Othello. Sometimes it's a snake, like Satan in the Garden of Eden. Sometimes it's your biggest fan, like Annie Wilkes in Stephen King's Misery. Here are some other examples. Norman Bates in Psycho, Darth Vader in Star Wars, Mr. Potter in It's a Wonderful Life. My favorite antagonist is Harry Lime in The Third Man, but I also like The Alien in Alien, The Terminator in Terminator, and Bonnie and Clyde in Bonnie and Clyde. You could say there were two antagonists in Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, the doctor and the monster, because, let's face it, both were monsters in their own way. What about Herman Melville's Moby Dick? Who was the real villain, Captain Ahab or the White Whale? Speaking of captains, consider Captain Bligh in Mutiny on the Bounty, Captain Queeg in Caine Mutiny, and Captain Hook in Peter Pan. You might ask, why must our hero face so many problems? Great question. Here's why. Because a good guy like Sherlock Holmes must bump into a really bad guy like Professor Moriarty to find out just how good he really is. Know what I mean? I'm Jim Lamb, and you just learned a little something-something about antagonists.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi. This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And oh my goodness. First, I want to say again, thank you very much, Glenn Erickson, for promoting Red Cross, because it is so important. They have sent out a plea to everybody who can donate blood to donate, because they are so very short of blood donations. But right now, I get to turn to a guest who's the title of her book. I love her book, actually. It's called Squats and Margaritas. Erin Washington. Hi, how are you, Erin?
I'm so good, Patsy. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, well, of course, I must say it was the last word in the title that got me. squats, I don't mind. Margaritas, I love. So it is so nice to welcome you to Joy on Paper. I could use one
Thank you so much.
Oh, boy.
It's a balance, Patsy. You can have the margaritas, but you got to get some squats in as well. It's all about a balance.
Yeah, I think I could do that. As a matter of fact, maybe what I'll do is just I'll start squatting, but in one hand, I'm going to have the margarita. So every time I go down and up, I'll have a sip. You know, it works out fine for me.
Perfect.
What a clever title. I love it. I mean, if you wanted to attract attention, that was the one to do.
Well, I'm so glad that it attracted your attention. It's that balanced lifestyle that I think all women, maybe even men, strive for. Like, you want to work out and take care of your physical body, but you still want to enjoy your life. And for 20 years, I didn't enjoy my life. I struggled with body image and no self-worth, and finally just kind of found this balanced lifestyle and got everything together later in life after I had my two kids.
Well, nobody would believe it, because the picture on the cover of your book, my goodness, yeah. You look gorgeous.
Oh, Patsy, thank you. That is that body I kind of just found. I just turned 40, and like from 16 to 36, I struggled with multiple eating disorders. I would get super, super skinny, then I'd put on weight, then I struggled with bulimia, and nobody knew it. And when I decided to write my book, I had to even like sit down with my family. They knew I was struggling, but there's so much shame in an eating disorder, and I just felt like I didn't want to let anybody down. I had a lot going on. Like in high school, I was captain of the soccer team. I was homecoming queen. I was prom queen, and I didn't want anyone to like know what was really going on with me. So I never told anyone, and I kind of struggled in silence and found the lifestyle of balance, like I said, at 37 after having kids, when typically women don't focus as much on their fitness and their health, and it's more about the kids. It's to show you that it's never too late. You're not too old. You can change your life.
Well, I you know, it's really amazing that you went through all that, you know, the struggles with weight, and people around you weren't aware of the bulimia. They didn't know?
No. So, again, it's such a shameful thing. You don't want people to know that you're throwing up your food. And I've done a lot of research, and eating disorders typically come on after some sort of identity change, a divorce, a loss. For me, it was the loss of my only identity that I ever knew, which was soccer. And I played Division I soccer in college. I trained for soccer my whole life. And Patsy, like, looking at all my like stuff from high school to write this book, I didn't even realize how much soccer held importance and value to me until I look back and read the entries that my 18-year-old self wrote. We were part of this journey project in high school, and everything would go back to soccer. Like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Hopefully I had a successful college soccer career. It's all that mattered to me. And when I got to college and I wasn't playing, I quit almost on a whim. And it hit me after I quit, you know, just how much my identity was gone. There was nothing else. And I fell into depression. And I mean, people knew I was struggling. They could tell. I mean, I would be super heavy, super skinny. But it's such a dark, shameful thing that, no, I wasn't sharing it with anyone. I was taking it to the grave, Patsy, until a writing coach was kind of pushing me to tell my story. And I kept saying, no, I just want to help the woman that feels like it's too late. I can show her how I got in shape. And she's like, you don't have any credibility unless you tell your story. So I did.
So now I love soccer. my weekend is spent around Premier League soccer. I watch Premier League soccer every Saturday and Sunday. So I'm a passionate person about Harry Kane, to tell you the truth. My sister and I are fanatics about Harry Kane. She has one of those 25 feet long scarves that she wraps around her for good luck whenever the Spurs are playing. So, which she has, she has a Harry Kane bobblehead, and she has a Harry Kane Lego set. So you can see we're really, really crazy about soccer. But I don't understand. When you were in high school soccer, I could never do soccer because, I mean, it was, you have to run and you have to, you're just like, it's nonstop. And I never thought about you having problems with weight because I thought you just burnt it off.
Well, for me, it's more mental, honestly, like an eating disorder. I am a firstborn perfectionist and nothing was ever good enough. And I wanted to be the best. I wanted to get a Division I scholarship. And to me, like, thin equaled good for soccer. Like, in shape meant I was better for soccer. And so I was so skinny that there was a point where my coach was like, you don't have any strength in your crosses anymore. And that kind of woke me up. And I was like, oh God, okay, we're talking about soccer now. Like, I really got to watch what I'm doing. And I was super skinny, but then I ate. And then, I don't know if you're familiar with exercise bulimia, I would basically just go and work out every time I ate to kind of cancel it out. And it's just such a mental, like, it's nothing to do with physical. Like, I didn't see myself as skinny as I was. It's a mental illness that I struggled with for over a decade and never told anybody about. And I stopped, like, the abuse of my body probably 15 years ago. But I was still living with restriction. And I think that, like, if you go through an eating disorder, the mental part of it is kind of always with you, even if you're not physically abusing your body anymore.
But you were never really massively overweight, were you?
No, I just, honestly, like, when people hear about bulimia, like, a lot of people just don't talk about it. They're kind of, like, put off that I even, like, talk about it so openly. But when you're bulimic and you're binging and purging, you'd think you'd be super skinny because you're throwing up your food. Honestly, it's throwing off all of the hormones in your body. So I was just in, like, this bloated, puffy, almost like fat suit of my body. Definitely something was off, but no one was thinking eating disorder because I wasn't thin, but it just makes you bloated and puffy and just does so much damage to your body that it's not a skinny, like, eating disorder. Bulimia made me bloated and puffy. I wouldn't say, like, massively overweight, but I was not in great shape in that state with my hormones all thrown off.
Were you aware at the time of Karen Carpenter?
No, it's so funny. Like, now I have, it's very funny you asked that. I just had Katie Couric on my podcast and I talked to her about her bulimia because she talked about that in her book that she struggled with bulimia. And I was like, how did you just stop? And she's like, when Karen Carpenter died, it just shook me and it was like, you're gonna die, like, this is so unhealthy. And when she passed away, and hers, it was anorexia, correct, or from her heart,
anorexia.
Yeah, Katie just told me, she was like, that is when I stopped. When she died from this, I was like, okay. And it kind of just took her out of it in her 20s and she stopped doing it. So I had just learned about Karen Carpenter a few weeks ago from Katie Couric.
So you're not aware of her music? You didn't know her music?
No, I'm 40.
You're a little younger than that. Of course, I was lucky enough. I actually saw her in concert. And when she died, I mean, it was so shocking to me because she's so beautiful, and I couldn't understand why she didn't see it. And it's still hard for me to understand. You're beautiful. You're gorgeous.
Thank you.
You know, it's...
You know what? It's very... There's a lot of pressure. And you say, like, Karen Carpenter, like, a singer, a beautiful woman. There's a lot of pressure that comes with that. And obviously not on that scale, but when I was in high school, like I said, like, I was the captain of the soccer team. I was homecoming queen. I was prom queen. You don't want to let anyone down. So you're almost, like, more hard on yourself and more of a perfectionist to kind of uphold that image. A lot of pressure comes with it. And I found a lot about birth order, like firstborn feel a lot of pressure about, like, setting the example. And I happen to be that. And just women in general, like, especially I struggled so much and there was no social media. And now I have a 6-year-old daughter and I just it pains me to think about her growing up with social media and all of the images that you're inundated with that are photoshopped and girls are trying to like live up to. There's just a lot of pressure as a woman. And again, a mental illness like an eating disorder, you don't see what everybody else sees and you're just in your head. And I never went to therapy or saw a therapist or got treatment for it. And it was only because of the shame. I didn't want anybody to know what I was doing. So maybe had I gone to treatment, they would have really delved into the mental part of it and I could be completely healed mentally. Because to be honest with you, Patsy, like it's still about a physical ideal to me to feel good about myself. And I know that that is not how it should be, but I'm just completely honest and vulnerable with that because I know a lot of women are chasing a physical ideal and I feel my best when I'm in my best physical body, but now that is a strong, healthy body and I'm not trying to be like rail thin like I was when I was anorexic and bulimic.
Well, now we've got this problem with I think it's a problem on the other side where they're saying, well, forget it, just eat whatever you want. It doesn't make any difference. I think that is also very bad. How do you work with people? I know you have this blog. It's actually fascinating. I've been reading it. And you're such a good writer. What's your advice to people nowadays? You have to be in shape without, you know, this body shaming business because you get this. But on the other hand, I'm against just letting yourself go completely.
Yes, 100%. It's all about balance. Like squats and margaritas is a balance. You work out a few days a week, move your body, but never let go of that indulgence that you need to have. For me, that is a margarita. What is yours, Patsy? What do you need to have?
Now I'm fixated on margaritas.
So you're with me.
Yeah, I'm with you. But
here's the problem. If you take it out completely and you restrict and you can't have margaritas, at some point you're going to go to a concert, to a wedding, and you're going to have one. And then for me at least, it's like, oh, I blew it and I'm off the wagon, and you give yourself permission to eat whatever you want for the rest of the week, the rest of the weekend. You'll just start over on Monday. And it's a vicious cycle of restriction, and then you have it, and then you punish yourself. And if you just allow for a daily indulgence of what you want, for me, it's a margarita, some people a glass of red wine, something sweet with their coffee, have it every day and don't have any shame or like feel guilt about it, you will stick with a healthy eating plan knowing that you can have that indulgence. So you're not going to quit. I eat what I want, but I stop when I'm satisfied. And it's all about like mindful eating. People call it intuitive eating. You just check in. If you want something on the menu, order that. Don't think you only have to have a salad, but check in. Have a couple bites. If you're still hungry, keep eating. The thing that you don't want to do is just finish it, everything that's on the plate, when you're already satisfied. So you check in. If you're getting full, you stop eating. You don't eat to fullness. You eat what you want until you're satisfied. And when I started doing that, I turned back on my metabolism and I started feeling hungry much more often. Like my body was working again because I was giving it what it wanted. I listened to my body. If I want fish tacos, I order fish tacos. And before I would be like, no sour cream, no cheese, guacamole on the side. And Patsy, I didn't even like that. And I would eat them all because I was like, oh, there's no cheese and sour cream. Now I order them and I eat them exactly as they come, but I eat one. And if I want another one, I have two. And then maybe I'll have the third one in a couple of hours. I don't just finish it because it's there. I'm mindful. And that has worked for me. I weigh 20 pounds less than I did when I was working out 7 days a week and only eating salads and not snacking. And I wrote this book for the woman that thinks that that is the right way, like I did. It's supposed to be calories in versus calories out. You just eat salads. You do your cardio every day. That failed me. So this is a different way. Squats and margaritas is having a daily indulgence, you know, going to the gym, not 7 days a week, and not living in that constant state of stress that I lived in for so long, trying to worry about what, like, if we went to a restaurant, I had to pull up the menu and see where we were going. If we went to a hotel, do they have a gym? I would set my alarm on vacation to go get a run in. And I was just overwhelmed and stressed out. And when I let go of that and started living with balance, everything kind of just leveled out and my body kind of went to where it was supposed to be. And I've maintained that through two pregnancies and just turned 40. So I figured it out kind of late. I wish I would have figured it out in my 20s, but here I am now.
Well, I think it's wonderful. I really enjoy it. I was reading one of your stories. It's called, I'm not going to miss 95% of my life to weigh 5% less. And I think that's a good message for people. I admire you so much. And of course, do you watch Premier League hockey? Soccer?
I don't. I watch, I'll watch the women, U.S. women's national team.
Of course, the U.S. women's, they're fantastic. But, I loved to watch gymnastics, but I do worry about these girls not eating properly.
Yes. It's just, we're told, it's funny, I have, so many nutritionists on my show now, and they still talk about, women think, to be in shape, you're supposed to restrict and stop eating. And she's like, it's so funny. I work with athletes and I will make them double, triple their calories. And then they start losing weight. When you restrict, your body kind of shuts off. And then you think about those athletes or high school athletes or even professional athletes that don't have a period. Their body is not working anymore because they've gotten so thin. And you just think that thin means in shape and better for sport. And that's what I thought. And it's dangerous, and raising my daughter, who's 6 and is the firstborn, I just watch everything I say in front of her. I'm not critical on my body. And my mom was always on diets, not to say that that had anything to do with my struggles, because you really have to be predisposed to it. I had 3 other sisters who were in the same house, and none of them struggled like I did. But I don't want to have anything in her mind and have her have one bit of struggle like I did. That is my mission now, to help other women not go through what I did for 20 years.
Wow. As I said, I think your cover photo is fantastic. Margarita in one hand, barbell another hand. And it's called Squats and Margaritas. And so the website is the same thing, Squats and Margaritas.
Yes.
And people can find
squatsandmargaritas.com.
Squatsandmargaritas.com. It's wonderful. The book is available online. It's inspirational. And as I was saying, I think that your podcast and your blog, because you do write so beautifully, and I think people will really enjoy that. And if they go there, I think you probably have a newsletter and people can sign up for everything, right?
Yeah, you can subscribe at squatsandmargaritas.com. And then the Squats and Margaritas podcast is wherever you get your podcast.
And there's lots of nice photos there, lots of Starbucks life lessons. Whoa, boy.
You got to read that one, Patsy. That is a good one.
I think it's great. I did, and it's fantastic. And the photos the photos there on are absolutely wonderful. And it's a fascinating, one of my favorite author websites, squatsandmargaritas.com. It's fun. Just to look at the photos and to read your little stories, I think it's wonderful.
Thank you so much, Patsy. I really appreciate that. Thank you for having me on.
Okay, well, it's been a joy to talk to you, and I'm glad that and it is the beginning of the new year, and people are thinking of diets and getting in shape and all of that. And I think if they read this, your website, it will give them this idea that yes, they can balance it out and live a happy and a healthy life, thanks to Erin Washington.
Oh, thank you so much. I hope so.
Okay. It's been a joy to talk to you there.
You as well, Patsy. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye, and Happy New Year to you and to your kids. It's wonderful. I love your
happy
site.
Happy New Year.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. Bye. Wow. It is fun. I love this. Normally, I might have said a gin and tonic, but the more I think about it, margaritas. Thank you. No.
I know. They're the best.
Exactly.
And I have skinny margarita recipes, Patsy, because some of them are full of sugar. So you can have a margarita. I have a margarita that you can make in the summer that you make with sugar-free Jello.
Ah.
It's frozen. It tastes like a frozen margarita, but it's 10 calories.
Wow. People, yeah. Listen to Erin. She's got advice for us. Okay. Thank you now. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Wow. I think it's fantastic. I like her. What an attitude. And what, you look at this photo. If she can look like that at 40, wow. Fantastic. You know, you never know what life is going to bring. You know, when you see these people running around playing soccer, you think that they're eating a lot to burn off all the calories. How they can run for 90 minutes, I do not know. It's just incredible. And then, on top of it, not eat. I don't know how she did it. But it is fascinating. And as I said, I love this website. She has photos that go with each story, and it's a fun website, really wonderful. And it's called Squats and Margaritas, and I think today, you know, I need a margarita. I think today it's going to be a quesadilla and a margarita day, because that's what I need. This later on, because I've got a very, very busy day. And I just want to say pretty soon... It's going to be wonderful. Rita Moreau is going to do some book buzzes for us soon, including one for Carol J. Perry's new book coming up in April, Till Death. And it is a wonderful, wonderful book. My sister, Natalie, the connoisseur of cozy mysteries, highly recommends it. She says pre-order it, because we got it in advance from the publisher, and we're lucky. So we got to read it, and Till Death is a wonderful, wonderful book. We finally have a wedding. It's book 12 in the series, the Witch City Mystery Series. We've been waiting for this wedding. When you get attached to a character and you go through book after book after book, and romance and romance and romance, and yeah, finally get the wedding. And so we really... enjoyed this book. My sister read it first. She grabbed it out of my hand the minute the book arrived, and I got it second. And Till Death is going to be, it's just a wonderful book. So anyway, pre-order it. Go on Amazon today and pre-order it. Meanwhile, remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them in an audible book, or if you're very, very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't unless you start writing. So start writing and get that book done, and what, you know, sometime next year maybe you will be a guest here on Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. Again, you did a wonderful job today. As always, he always does. And he's so cheerful and happy today, because it's a wonderful day here in beautiful Clearwater, Florida. And I'm waiting for the Jack Reacher streaming video series to start February 4th. Everybody, have a wonderful day. And Ed's going to salute me, because I'm going to salute him, because I should have been a general. I want to be a general. I want to go to the War College and talk to these people. They need some good advice, and I've got it. Bye-bye now.